This podcast was created using Anchor.
Boom, 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 boom. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, 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 dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. Hum, dum, dum, da, da, dum. It's good. So good. Oh, since we're together. It's good, so good, oh, since we're together.
That's really, that's inside baseball, babe.
Hey, everyone. We're back.
We're back. Season two.
We know you've been clamoring. We've gotten a lot of emails, Marco Polo's, phone calls asking, when are you guys coming back? Are you coming back? Was that just a fluke? You know,
was
do you
that a
need 20
episode fluke?
Yeah, because, well, but you never know. We may have just wanted to do it. You know, just to get everything off our minds, and now we're done with it. But
no, such luck.
We're not done. We still have more to say.
Season two, new and improved.
But why I was laughing is because we did this exact same show yesterday.
Well, not the exact same show.
No, it'll be a little different.
What I love most about rivers is you can't step in the same river twice. Every show's different. That's what live podcasting is all about, babe.
Right. But we were in my closet yesterday doing this
you
for
mean
two
in our,
hours.
In our soundproof booth.
Mm-hmm. And David didn't understand the new update on GarageBand, so it only recorded mono something.
It recorded on everything like on the left side of your ear. So if you had been listening to what we recorded yesterday,
you would only hear it in one ear pod or AirPod.
Yeah.
And so then we had to trash 2 hours of work and come back today and do it. So here we are. And I'm so happy to be here. I'm so thankful that I still have you guys as listeners. You have been really faithful fans. And we just had to bring you season two.
And we had to improve on season two. We had to go back to the drawing board and say, how can we stay true to the theme of the swirl?
Yes.
And carry that theme throughout every episode of season two. And also, we're going to do less episodes of season two.
Yes.
But they're going to be more focused on specific ideas related to the swirl. Because this is the swirl with Bree and Dave.
Amen.
And I'm Dave.
And I'm Bree. Sorry, we usually do that at the top, but we're feeling it out.
So this week, because, babe, what's this week?
This week is...
Valentine's Day! And we have plans, don't we?
We do. We are going, everyone, to Ruth Chris Steakhouse, which is so bossique. But it's like my favorite steak. We're not eating steak.
But we're not eating steak, yeah. Which is that's the twist on it for this year. So the theme this week is
love,
because it's Valentine's Day and because we're starting a new season of love.
Yes.
So
we've got a very special guest with us today.
Very excited about
and
it.
And we're going to make sure that all of our themes, because what we found last season was that you couldn't listen to an episode like one episode out because we didn't reintroduce ourselves and we didn't introduce things through our specific prism. So this season we'll be doing very specific topics, but like putting them through the filter of our relationship, race, interracial love, those things. So this week will be about interracial love. And
we probably will be having more guests this season.
Definitely.
They probably will be connected to our Broadway community because that's where we operate,
we won't be speaking to them about their careers or, you know, what it was like working with Patti LuPone. I mean, that stuff is cool, but I'd rather talk to my friends about real life things that are happening, because honestly, nobody's working right now. I mean, of course, there are people doing, you know, I'm doing online things and online concerts, whatever. But there's nothing really to say right now. I'd much rather hear what artists have to think about life and pivoting and love and, you know, just topics that are not related to theater. So I think that'll be exciting, right?
It's going to be great.
Yes.
Oh, and we're gonna hold on to some tried and true
yes
segments, maybe back off on a couple of less popular ones. So we're evolving, we're changing, we're growing, kind of like every relationship that stays healthy.
So true. So what do we want to just update the kids on what we've been up to?
Let's update the kids on what we've been up to.
So since our last episode was at the end of 2020,
oh,
right?
That reminds me. I have a correction I have to start with.
Correction. I know your father.
At the end of season one, we said we'd be back in January. And I looked back on that and realized that that was actually a folly. There was no way we were going to be back in January.
No. I needed a break. And I wanted to get through the holidays, because the holidays for me, I know the holidays for all of us is like Thanksgiving into Hanukkah, into Christmas, into New Year's Eve. And then if you add me on, I've got to get another week through to my birthday. So it was a long period of time. And I didn't want to feel any pressure after that. We started, what did we do? Oh, the day after my birthday, we started a raw vegan cleanse for one full month. And we could not do a podcast while we were raw vegan. We couldn't even think straight.
It was a full-time job.
It was a full-time job becoming thinner. So,
And we've succeeded.
We've succeeded. David is how many pounds lighter?
I'm 20 pounds down.
And in true woman fashion with hormones, I am 12 pounds down, but I will take it.
But we went a month, like three meals a day.
Juicing,
week.
Salads, no meat, nothing cooked.
Nothing cooked.
So we were eating things like cashew burgers and nut sushi and Lots of avocado.
Lots of avocado, lots of juicing. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. And after, I mean, I felt great the first week. The second week was a liquid cleanse week. And it had some solids. It had fruit salads, whatever. It had regular salads. But then it gears up for this day in the middle where you have only water. So on either side of that day, you have only liquids. So those 3 days were really difficult. But after that, it was pretty great.
Yeah, the raw vegan thing means that you're actually never really hungry, because just the way it fills you up, nothing's been cooked away, no nutrients or enzymes have been cooked away, so you actually are surprisingly satisfied with very little all the time. And that's really revelatory when you're, you know, when you're kind of oriented to thinking, what meat am I going to have with this meal three times a day plus snacks?
Yeah, and I don't really think like that, but David really does. So it was, but however, he's done this cleanse before. He did it while I was on tour with Falsettos, and he also lost a lot of weight then, I think 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And in that long of a period, in only a month. So, you know, our bodies have kind of plateaued, which I'm grateful for, because it means that our bodies are catching up, and it means, I think, less of a chance of putting it all back on. I've been plateaued at 12 pounds for, I think, like 2 to 3 weeks now. We did a little damage on the Super Bowl. We let ourselves, the Super Bowl was our celebration for getting through a month. And we didn't really need to celebrate, but we did. And we did a vegan Super Bowl. And so we let ourselves have, what was it? Tutti Frutti, Tutti Tutti?
Yeah, it was called Tutti Frutti, Tutti Tutti. still working out what exactly that is.
We had vegan sour cream.
Tofutti.
Tofutti, that's it.
Yes, we had
tofutti,
some of that.
Well, veganaise, fake wings, Beyond Beef. They were all things that are heavily processed that we hadn't had in a month. And wow, didn't go so well, especially for David.
Yeah,
so.
Physically didn't have the best couple days after that. But also gorged myself like an idiot, of course, on all of that.
Oh,
plus, we had some actually healthy vegan snacks. Like, we just made, you know, guacamole, and we made fresh hummus. And, you know, Brandon and Maddie came over, and Brandon had made this beautiful sourdough bread, and we, you know, ate that. And I mean, so that stuff was healthy. That was sort of phase one. But then we went into phase two during the game, which
and
was...
And David lost himself. But I think it was because the Chiefs were losing so terribly. And we lost our minds. I mean, what else could we do?
Right, really had no choice.
We had no choice but to just try to feel worse.
Yeah.
So, and then the alarm was going off in our building. And
oh, yeah, that was really weird,
that
too.
That was terrible. So we all just felt crazy. It was a lot.
So we all put on 3 pounds.
So, yeah, David and I both put on 3 pounds just from that night.
But it's a week later, and I've taken it back off, so I'm fine.
And I've almost taken it back off.
Well, you got one more day.
You know, I just need one good excavation. Okay.
We're gonna have a very healthy experience at Ruth's Chris tomorrow night.
Yes, we're not eating steak. We're eating... I actually have been gearing up to eat fish because I said I was going to be a plant-based girl, but with fish because... Come on now. So I actually feel fine not eating meat. I feel tighter. I feel more like... Less jiggly. I feel like...
Less jiggly.
Ow.
Less jiggly. Less jiggly. Less jiggly.
Hey. So that's how I feel. And I've lost my thought. So there we go.
I'm sorry. I was
not
just
even
feeling
a good
you.
Song.
I was feeling you, though. I really was. You're talking about Ruth's Chris, and you're going to...
I'm
going
to have fish.
Be a
and
fish
vegetables.
Girl. You're going to be vegan and fish.
Yeah, and of course a potato because it's Ruth Chris.
Well, and also potatoes are, you know.
They are a whole food.
They come from the earth.
Very starchy. Pomme de terre, if you will.
Wow.
Apple of the earth. And
gosh, you are so classy.
I'm very classy. Yesterday I played the violin for an hour just to get my brain going again, my fingers moving.
Well, there's a reason for the violin, babe.
There is I'm not just doing it for fun, although it was really fun. I used to play the violin from the fifth grade until I was like 16. And I was very good, actually. And I put it down, and I may have an opportunity to be playing it again on Broadway soon. So I was like, let me just pull it out and start practicing again. And so that was really, really fun because I got my old Suzuki Method book out. And started doing drills and scales and kind of just like figuring out how far behind I was. It's pretty far behind, but not terrible. Not terrible.
Well, I just love the story about, I guess we won't talk about people, places, or things or what it's going to be, but I love the story about how you were in this workshop and you decided that you wanted to have your character play the violin and the director said to you, oh, so this way I won't be able to cast it without you. And
yeah.
You said yes.
It's true. We can't tell you anything about it, really, but I'm going to be fiddling, hopefully, if everything works out.
It's all going to work out, babe. Everything's going to work out.
Okay.
Go get vaccinated, everybody. All right. So, new year, new season. We want to get to our special guest interview, so we're gonna dive right in.
Yes.
To This Week in Gaggery.
Your favorite.
Gaggery's back, babe.
All right. What's your week, babe?
Okay, you want me to go first?
Yes, please.
Okay, so this is connected to the vegan cleanse that we've been talking about. And I'll try to get through this really fast, but boy was I gagged by this one. I'm getting the time signal.
Well, because I know you can be long-winded.
So when I was a child.
Here we go.
Back in Cincinnati in the 60s. This is true. No, this is true. I had this aversion to cooked green vegetables. And the story I told myself was my mom made these bird's eye frozen vegetables boil in a bag and they tasted like slop and I couldn't eat them. And my dad, who was this military rage addict, dry drunk, veteran guy at the time. He evolved over time. But at that time, he got so irritated that he would beat the hell out of me if I wouldn't eat my vegetables. So the story in my brain was I developed this aversion to anything cooked or green mm-hmm. over that childhood traumatic experience.
Right.
So that if I'm in the presence of cooked green broccoli, especially Brussels sprouts, cauliflower. I feel like I'm going to die. It feels like a fight or flight thing. Mm-hmm. So that's a story I've told myself my whole life. Now, some vegetables I've been able to eat along the way, but not really ultimately any of those three or four big ones. Plus, you have to add cilantro to that because I'm one of those people who taste cilantro as soap flakes. But then one day we were doing this raw vegan cleanse, and on the raw vegan cleanse is bok choy raw, which you dip into guacamole, which I really was enjoying. But you decided, my beautiful wife decided one day she's going to steam the bok choy after we get through the raw vegan part. And the smell in the apartment is so overpoweringly deathly for me that I'm laying on the couch in my office unable to function. It's that bad. And I didn't know this was a bok choy problem.
Dramatic.
And it occurred to me, I can't be the only person who is smelling this like it was like a plate of shit just pressed into my face.
So what'd you do, babe?
I Googled bok choy plus smell aversion. And babe, up popped a whole bunch of stuff about this phenomenon for one out of five human beings called being a super taster. Mm-hmm. Now, a super taster is someone who has developed or has a developed sense of taste that is created to protect some people from being poisoned, from the sense of arsenic, and creates a sulfurous reaction inside the olfactory senses of the person who suffers from this or who benefits from this. Mm-hmm. This is of an important person in any herd because they're the person who's protecting people from poisoning the tribe or you know, poisoning the themselves. So I have this, and apparently it makes you feel like you're like, you know, like you're gonna die. Then there's three levels of this. You can be a super taster, which I am, a medium taster, which a lot of people are, and then a no taster. And if you are a no taster, you can, those are the people who really enjoy a lot of spice, a lot of flavor, like just overpower me with hotness or whatever, because I'm just trying to get a sensation of flavor and taste. And those are, I guess, the lucky ones. And people who can, like, who can eat these cruciferous vegetables when they're cooked are fall in that category. Now, this was a revelation to me at my age to realize that I haven't been crazy. I didn't just make it up. It's not psychosomatic. Mm-hmm. It is an actual real thing. It didn't change it. It didn't mean that suddenly, like, I could be in the room with cooked bok choy and not want to die. But at least it made me feel like, you know, justified in having that reaction. Like, that is an actual thing. Thank God for the internet. And I share this with you because that was a gaggery about gaggery that I didn't see coming. And that's my story.
That was pretty good, babe.
How concise was that?
It was okay. That was about 4 minutes. I'll take it. Can I move on to mine?
Yes, absolutely.
My This Week in Gaggery is my friend and sister, Tori Newman.
Tori. Now,
a lot of people don't, some of you might know Tori. She was at our wedding. Others may not. But she is a girl that I was roommates with in my junior year in college. She was older than me, so we only lived together for one full year, and then she left me. But we've stayed friends since college. God, we graduated in 07, so a while. And she's just become one of my closest friends. And for the last 2 years, she's been working on a novel. And in the last year, it's kind of longer than that. But in the last year and a half or so, she's had an agent. And we've known a little bit of what was going on. We knew she was in note sessions. We knew she was, you know, rewriting and holed up in her apartment, just really going for it. And recently, a press release came out that's read like, former flight attendants pens seven-figure deal for two novel book deal. And I was like, And I looked at David and I was like, babe, seven figures means Millions.
That's millions, babe.
That's millions. And yeah.
And that's... not just any, you know, deal, publishing house, Simon and Schuster.
Simon and Schuster, people.
So this is like, this is such a gaggery because this is, you know, we all have friends who do things that we're all proud of and we do things ourselves.
Oh my God, yeah.
But this this was the biggest thing that ever happened to this any of our friends. This is
bigger than a Tony Award, people.
I mean, we all
hate to say it.
You know, the American dream of writing the great American novel and selling it. I mean, our friend just fucking did that. She was a
she came to New York with all of us. I mean, I actually got here after her, but we all were here together, and everyone was trying to be an actor, right? And she used to sell books in New York City, and now she's got this deal. She eventually joined the family business, went to being a flight attendant for Virgin America, and then Virgin America got bought by Alaska Airlines, and she was a flight attendant for 10 years. Basically got an idea on her like red eyes from New York to LA. She's in Arizona, based in Arizona, but she would be on these long hauls, and she got an idea to write a novel. And I'm going to read this little thing, blurb to you. You just boarded a flight to New York. There are 143 other passengers on board. What you don't know is that 30 minutes before the flight, your pilot's family was kidnapped. For his family to live, everyone on your plane must die. The only way the family will survive is if the pilot follows his orders and crashes the plane. Enjoy the flight.
Ooh! This book is called Falling.
It's called Falling, a novel.
By?
T.J. Newman, okay?
That's the name, T.J. Newman.
You can pre-order this at Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Bookshop, Amazon. Mine is ordered on Amazon. It comes out July 6th. I think the hardcover price is $28. And if you want to, you know, have a proximity to one of my star friends, then you should definitely pre-order this book. Again, it's called Falling by T.J. Newman.
One of America's newest, most eligible bachelorettes.
Oh my God. Yes, honey. And she's beautiful. I mean, that does help. I'm not going to lie to you.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So she's got a deal for two books, and she's now starting on the second book. But, you know, when we spoke to her when the pandemic first happened, we would call her at 7 o'clock so she could hear everyone clapping for the medical frontline workers.
Right.
And we would cry together on the phone, and she would just say how she had already been quarantining and was working and staying in her house and not going grocery shopping at all and only seeing family because, you know, it's just a lot going on. And
then we'd ask about how the book was going.
And you know...
And I would do something condescending like, you know, Tori, if you need me to give a read, I can always happily... I'd be happy to give you notes. And but she was like, oh, thanks, Dave. That's really, really fun.
But what we didn't know is that she had already signed that deal and was... finishing that book up and was about to start on her second. We didn't know that.
No.
She also had volunteered to take a year-long furlough from her job, and we were like, girl, how you gonna survive?
And now we know.
And now we know. She's fine.
She also dropped this like a G because...
She didn't tell anyone. She didn't tell anyone. She didn't let anybody know. It just came out, and we were like, ew.
Okay. This was Beyonce level droppage.
This was a middle of the night album drop, visual album. Like, how dare you?
How fucking dare you? Tori, we love you. We're proud of you.
You're a queen.
And that's This Week in Gaggery.
Oh, yeah.
And when we come back, Crystal and Lloyd.
Boom, 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 boom.
And we're back.
And we're back, everybody.
So, babe, who's our special guest on this week's love theme?
Ooh, okay. So our special guest this week is my Capricorn sister, who just happens to be a Broadway star and television star. Her New York credits include Hamlet at the Public, Witness Uganda, and Invisible Thread at Second Stage with David.
We worked on that together, yeah.
Cabin in the Sky at City Center, Paradise Blue, and Heather's the Musical. Her TV credits include Madam Secretary, Lie to Me, and ER. She is a two-time nominated NAACP Image Award for her role as Daisy Lee Forrester on CBS's The Bold and the Beautiful. You will know her from the Broadway hit Dear Evan Hansen as the first and original BBP, Black Girl with a Backpack. Hey, black girl with a backpack. Hey, black girl with a backpack.
Come on.
Alana Beck.
Yes.
Please welcome to the swirl, Crystalyn Lloyd.
Hi.
Oh my God. Hi. Look who it is.
It's me.
Oh my God. We're so excited.
We're very excited. I have to tell you, so I saw your Facebook post. Okay, so first of all, let me tell you about this podcast. So we started this podcast when the George Floyd event happened and all the protests started. And we were like, well, we needed to talk about it because we were having issues. Mm-hmm. And when you put your flash forward to when you put your post up, I was like, oh, wow, I would love to have a conversation with her about, you know, whatever you guys end up talking about on Clubhouse, but also just our experience and the experience that I've talked to a lot of people who've been in longstanding interracial relationships. I mean, much longer than us, like 20 years and the conversations that they had to have when everything broke out.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. Our podcast is kind of centered. It's called The Swirl because it's centered around us in an interracial relationship, interracial, intergenerational, which was cool. But we felt like when we did the first season, which was 20 episodes of just really pandemic, we were like, oh, we need to kind of focus in and like figure out and put everything through the prism of race and how we're experiencing that together.
Now we're assuming that Crystalyn is not already a swirlhead, but I don't know that that's
I'm
true.
I'm gonna assume that.
Are you a listener to the pod, Crystalyn?
I haven't heard your podcast yet.
Oh my God, there's 20 episodes. You're gonna have to catch up.
It's like
you
a
guys
lot.
Have
don't
been
you?
So busy.
We've well, been, yeah. Well, it's not so much busy as like, you know, we just haven't had work.
No, so, we committed to doing one a week for, you know, and we did. We did a pretty good job of it until the end of the year. And then we started
to slack
off.
We actually did. And it was great because we got like this time to just sit in our closet and talk to each other.
Yeah.
And we talked to each other. We were very big communicators anyway, but like, I don't know. I felt like with the protests, it was like we needed to just, I needed to talk about how I was feeling.
Yeah.
Because I could not see and communicate with him because I was so sad and angry.
Yeah.
And it wasn't his fault. but I felt connected.
She would walk through the living room and just kind of say colonizer under her breath. It was weird. I didn't understand it, you know.
But I had one time where I said to him, like, we were supposed to see his daughter and her fiance, Maddie and Brandon. And I said, oh, I'm really not feeling seeing Maddie and Brandon tonight because I just don't want to see more white people.
Hey.
And he was like, I get it. He understood and he actually was going to cancel. And then I was like, okay, but see, I got to get past this because I'm married to you now. And she's my stepdaughter. It's like,
I
that's
see.
Not actually okay to say. Like I should have thought about this before.
So but at least you were honest.
Yes. That was the first step. Like,
that's
let's
right.
be honest with how we feel. And it's not going to be something you want to hear.
And feelings are neutral things. Like, you know, they're not right or wrong. They just are.
Yeah,
exactly. I think that that's very, I've always liked that about you, that you're so honest. So I think that that's a really important step in interracial relationships is the honesty.
Number one, probably.
Unfiltered.
Yeah.
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 And I think honesty doesn't have to equate to cruelty either.
No.
And I think in Brianna's case, she's very practiced at just, you know, standing for herself and not against anyone else and just like, this is my truth.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, I don't, this is not my intention to hurt you with it, but it's just my intention to speak it.
No, I'm the same way, Brie, because I remember in the last like couple of years, I wanted to get tested for being on the spectrum because I was like, I feel like my honesty is so sometimes just like, it's hard for people to swallow. And I'm looking at them like, I didn't call you outside of the name your mother gave you. Like, I didn't insult you. I just told you what I needed. Why are you so upset?
But this is why I'm so comfortable watching Love on the Spectrum, which is another topic.
I loved that show.
Definitely watched Love on the Spectrum. They did a really good job with Love on the Spectrum too, in terms of editing the stories together and making it pay off emotionally, and you know, unlike Indian Matchmaking.
I watched Love on the Spectrum on the heels of watching Indian Matchmaker.
Yes.
So I was like, wow, there's a huge difference in how well these shows turned out.
But it used to be like, his daughter said that she was felt very awkward watching Love on the Spectrum, just because she felt awkward with people who are really on that spectrum.
Yeah.
And because they are super, super honest, they're super hyper aware of themselves and you. And that makes her uncomfortable, which I totally understand. But I was like, oh, this, I'm thriving. Like, I would watch these people all day, every day.
Now, I can relate to your daughter, David, because I know that that's one of the things that I was like, yes, with people on the spectrum, that's the thing that makes me like, I don't want to offend. And I'm like, I know I'm uncomfortable a lot of times when I'm with people, because I'm like, I don't want to say anything wrong. I don't want to trigger you.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can understand the discomfort of being like watching these people be so vulnerable.
Well, my heart would just break. And that was the difficulty for me with Love on the Spectrum. I was just, my heart would just break for these people.
They wanted it so bad.
Well, and I just...
And we were them. They were us. Like, everything they said, oh my God, do you remember that metaphor the girl said? She's like, I'm in a clear box and I can see on the outside, but like no one can see me. Is that what she said?
No, and I can't get out.
And she can't get out. Ooh, that took you out. You cried.
I did.
David.
Okay, but this is not what we actually are doing this podcast on. What is
because I've worked with Crystalline and I can vouch for her social cues and her ability to connect.
Yes.
And she's not as far
on the spectrum, from my. If you want to get the test, girl? Get the test.
But from my,
I think it was because I also just watched Amy Schumer's special
and
her husband did test on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yes. But he was clearly on the spectrum.
Well, you're very high functioning if you're on the spectrum, Crystal.
Yes. I could be.
I'm going to read this post that I saw on Facebook, on your Facebook, for the audience.
Okay.
Am I the only Black woman in my community struggling to date white men? Not that it's required, but I'm no stranger to interracial relationships. Black women are a traumatized gender, and being fetishized is real. So is being training wheels for those obsessed with our culture, history, music, and Lord help me, even oppression. I've been referred to jokingly as a starter chick for white men because of my proximity to whiteness growing up. Lately, I've been longing for familiarity in my romantic relationships, and I'm hesitant to engage in a relationship where I'll have to explain aspects of Blackness. I can't be the only one. So I read that, dot, dot, dot. So I read that and I was like, ooh, let me follow this thread. And see, and then I wrote a response, which was like 2 pages long. And I was like, so Rihanna, like, no. Because that's what you do on Facebook. You write responses.
Yeah, that's why I got off Facebook. That's absolutely why I left Facebook.
That's why I stay on Facebook. I'm like, I have to do this on Facebook with my friends and my close family so I don't do it with strangers on Instagram. It's the only way I can keep myself from having to like delete a post I feel guilty about later on Instagram.
Yes.
I'm like, let me just go to Facebook where my community is.
So Facebook is like a trash box, really. But there's 53, I'm looking at this now, there wasn't this many when I first saw it, but there's 53 comments now, pre and post Clubhouse. Now, for our listeners who don't know, tell us what Clubhouse is.
Yeah, Clubhouse is an app that is invite only. And, you know, you can get up to like 3 to 5 invites when you get on and someone will send you. It's not as hard to get on, but and you just, it's like radio. It's like a radio play. And you listen to people who have created a room who are self-appointed moderators, and you listen to them discuss anything from, you know, interracial relationships to the stock market to I got on
Dream Girls Live.
Dream Girls Live, like auditions are happening. Black men with beards. There's a one called Black Men with Beards. And they read to you as you fall asleep.
Oh my God. That is a niche community. And
honey, I love stumbling upon my friends like in the rooms with me. I'm like, oh, well, hello, Amber or Kim Exum, or you know what I mean? I'm like, we're all here listening to Black Men with Beards read us to bed.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So, wow. So, so
wait, are Black men without beards, then they need not apply, I assume.
I don't know, David. I think okay. It's the honors system.
All right.
I'm a little scared because I know there's somebody in there lying who just wants to like practice.
Read.
Read. He's got no beard.
And who has
no beard.
Wait. You have no beard, sir.
You have no beard, sir.
You have no beard. Yeah.
So what Crystalline did is she said, let me, because there were so many people commenting. You said, let me go to Clubhouse and host this room and have this conversation with other Black women. And I don't know if they were just Black women. I don't know anything about it, but I wanted you to tell us about it and tell us what you came out of it with. And we can discuss those things and share our experience. But I just wanted to know how it went, because I thought about downloading Clubhouse, but I said, I can't do more social media. So
it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a commitment.
I don't need another, you know, reason to be on my phone for hours a day. So
I get it.
We had to let it go. But I want to hear your experience with it. You know, how many people were in there, ranging women? Give me the gossip.
So it was, there were a lot of moderators because I'm new to Clubhouse. Like, I don't really know how it works.
Okay.
But you don't want to have like over 5 moderators.
Too many
I assume.
In the kitchen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was nice. I had girls that it was nice because it was also a community of women that I don't normally get to see, even like pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
And one of them in particular was a girl that I had grown up with in my hometown in Spring. Mm. And she had, you know, growing up, she.
Because when we always love one another.
Wait.
Sorry.
Somebody explain, please.
I am in my garage band because it's looping through to Zoom. It's how I do voice and stuff like that. And so, what you heard was a leftover soundbite on my track.
Well, it sounded me doing great.
What were you doing? What was that? Then we got a little taste
of. It was an audition for Nick Jr.
Oh, all right.
To do like a song.
To
be like
God.
A singer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it out there?
It's
Has
cute.
It been submitted?
It was submitted. I was not chosen.
Oh.
Okay. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
What's funny about that? Nothing is funny.
I'm sorry. That just, that was not right.
David straight up laughed in my face.
Because, you know, look.
The fact that she didn't book a job is like hilarious.
It is hilarious. Why would you not book that job?
So funny.
I said the same thing. I was like, who wouldn't want this?
Always
but anyway,
another. Sorry.
Back to Clubhouse.
Yeah.
It was a cute little jingle. But the girl that I grew up with in my hometown, her father's like a famous ex-baseball player. I looked up to her. And from my view, she was dating white boys and
this
getting attention. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And was getting attention from white boys. And I was like, we don't have the same struggle. You know, she has lighter skin than me. I was like, we don't have the same struggle. And I kind of, it was wonderful. I wouldn't say like my bubble was like popped, you know, when she and I got on the Clubhouse together and she started revealing that like she had the same struggles I did.
Really?
And she was feeling the same, you know, she started talking about how she felt growing up in the community and, you know, finding out like, she wasn't dating these white boys. She was in the same boat I was, which was the friend's boat, but it didn't look that way. So it was nice to find somebody that I was relating to and having the same similar struggles with. And then it was also cool to see how many people were showing up just like listening, popping in and out, because we went on for a while. I feel like 2 hours is a long time.
Oh, no, great.
Yeah. And there were a couple of white men in the room. One got up and was like very effusive. And he was like, thank you so much for having this conversation. He was like, I'm learning a lot. And, you know, I don't remember everything he said, but it was very encouraging. And then, yeah, so it got very intimate, which I liked. Like we just got very honest.
Yeah.
And
I mean, and I would like to ask you, because, you know,
please,
our listeners know you from Broadway, but we're not really going to talk about Broadway.
No.
Or, you know, because who cares, really? There is none.
Well, I do. That would be my preference.
He would love to just talk to you about shows.
I really would. That would be me. But it's fine. It's really not about that.
Like your struggles, like, and I also will say, when I grew up in Kansas City, like middle class, went to a private Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And but I had a very black family, that was very much like, we don't see you ever dating a white man. We see you a brown skin man. And they would always specify based on my skin color, like, because I was a brown skin girl. So they'd be like, you need to be with a brown skin man. So light skin was like kind of questionable.
Wow.
And a dark guys, like I dated an African guy for 7 years and they were like not into it at first because of their own ideas of African men, right? So I started dating white boys as, like you're saying, in this friend thing.
Yeah.
In like the 7th and 8th grade, which, you know, you weren't really doing much. You were like going to the movies, whatever. It's not
yeah. difficult.
So they were funny white guys were like my top friends.
Yeah.
And I dated one and then I didn't date another one until God, I think college. I think like senior year of high school into college.
Yeah.
And then when I became sexually active around 1920, it was,
I thought you were going to say around the time you and I started dating. So
that would have been great too.
I would have appreciated it.
Not the truth.
I know.
So I started not dating white boys, but just like, honestly, just sleeping with them.
Sleeping with them.
And it wasn't that I didn't want to date them. It's just, I had a weird feeling like we just didn't go together, to be honest. And I think it's because my family had made it seem like that was not something they saw for me. And they really encouraged me to date black men. And I love black men.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah. And then, but I always vibed with white boys.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and it wasn't until David that I was like, okay, I could see this being long-term. And I'm still learning as we go along. But I never felt, I know this idea of fetishizing came up because that's a thing with yeah. black women. That's a thing yeah. with all women, I think. But when you get over-sexualized in the media, it becomes, I want to date her because she's a black girl with that kind of body and I want to experience that, or those kind of lips or whatever.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you more about that idea and mm-hmm. what your struggles were dealing with that when you first dated white guys.
Yeah, I think my experience in the category of being fetishized, I became very aware of it more so in my late 20s
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't dating. I wasn't dating in high school.
Yeah.
Much to my parents' sadness.
And, really?
Oh, they wanted me to be girly and like date boys. And I was like, boys scare me.
Oh.
I was terrified of boys. And so
wow.
I had lots of guy friends and
yeah.
a lot of them were white. My guy friends white guy friends tended to be athletes.
Mm. And where'd you grow up again?
Houston. Well, a city outside of Houston called Spring.
Okay.
Spring, Texas. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. So
Texas boys. Okay.
I know. Texas boys. But I was like an athlete, you know, before yeah. I decided to do acting. And so they were just in my circle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were usually like very Christian.
Mm.
So, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
So I wasn't, if I was fetishized, at that age, I was not aware of it. Yeah. I certainly didn't have a language for it, but yeah. I knew that that existed. Mm-hmm. I remember having a conversation with my mom and my dad's sister, my aunt, before I went off to high school. And, you know, I mentioned this in the clubhouse. They sat me down and they were like, look, you're not going to date the way your brothers did. Black men having interracial relationships, for some reason, is just less scary for white parents. It's just more common. And they were like, they're the boys. They're like, boys ask out and girls say yes or no. Girls have right. to like wait.
Right.
And so they were like, you're probably not going to date like your brothers did. And it's not because there's anything wrong with you. It's not because you're not pretty. It's because there's something wrong with society. Mm. It's because these white boys can't bring home a black girlfriend. Like their parents just aren't going to go for it. And so I really appreciated the talk. And also like, because it did prep me. I had a lot of like fun guy friend relationships in church and stuff like that. But I carried so many crushes. Brianna and David, I was so boy crazy.
Wow. But that's so funny because you were so scared of them before.
I know. But it was safer to daydream about them than it was to actually interact mm-hmm. with them.
Mm-hmm.
Aww. Oh, it was so much safer. It was.
Oh, my God.
That's
I know what. I know what I'm going to say. I never say anything wrong in my daydreams. Like, I'm totally cool all the time. I have the best sense of humor. So I was really satisfied with what my therapist would call, like, erotic fantasy. Like, you're like, living relationships in your head.
Yes.
So when I got to, like, my mid-20s and I was done with missionary work and I was, like, in L.A., I was like, I need to, like, start dating. So around, like, 25...
You were working on a soap opera at this point.
I had
you?
Booked the soap opera and my co-hosts, I won't go into that. But the point is, I was like, oh, I should start dating. And so I started dating this white guy. And he was my first experience dating a white guy. And we had known each other for like 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a friendship with him. But I still noticed ways, like looking back, in which I was fetishized, like the idea of being black and the idea of being a black woman with like a big butt and like have my black friends and like the kind of music my black friends and I listen to, like, and I don't blame him. Like, black culture is lit. Like, yeah. this shit is dope. And I, you know, I think what I notice is that behavior from like in the dating world, like ghosting and where guys play hard to get or they string you along. It felt different from a white guy than it did coming from a black man. I'm not saying it's worse. I'm not saying it's better, but I had like different internal struggles when that happened.
If it would happen with a white guy. Like, I feel like, and I know, think what you think of slave play, but there were moments in that play that really resonated. What we do is connected to very old stuff that was set back in those days.
Yeah.
And, you know, that idea of sleeping around with the slave girl.
Right.
I mean, or, you know, getting in bed with the master, like that's all really warped. Mm-hmm. And things that I do not want to explore in 2021. Like, I don't want to unwrap those things because I've done a really good job of distancing that. That is something that happened back then, but it does affect the way we are and mm-hmm. how we react to things. And I felt the same way when I was a kid. And this feels weird to say, but I always felt like, was I good enough to date a white guy? And that's a very warped way of thinking, mm-hmm. but it's the way it was set up in my mind and what I observed. Mm-hmm. My mother, I found out much later that my mother had like dated white men and she was attracted to like white Hollywood guys. Yeah. Like, she loved Ed Harris. She loved Tommy Lee Jones, like an old, like, you know, not old, but like Salt and Pepper man.
Yeah. She likes a mature.
Yes. But like, she would only tell me that by... Okay. She would only tell me that.
Like mother, like daughter. I know that's what you're
like,
thinking.
But like, she would not share that with her sisters. So my aunts never, they knew like she had dated white guys, but she was like, no, I'm not going to, in that generation, it was like, I'm not going to stir things up by
no, my mother never, I almost said fucked. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
This my mother didn't fuck with white men. Like.
Ever.
No. And they grew up in Beaumont, Texas. Like, it's not safe.
Right.
Yeah,
white people were not safe. That's the thing my grandmother has, like, reminded me of. My dad's mother, who's 92, 93. She's like, proximity to whiteness equaled danger.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter what you were doing with a white person. Like, it equaled danger for you because it could turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And your word meant nothing compared to theirs or anyone else's who's white. So if someone else don't like you being with a white person and they raise hell, you're at the mercy of that white person, not the one you're with. So I actually felt like I wasn't good enough for white guys and like I wasn't black enough for black guys.
Well, I definitely felt that, girl. Come on. But you feel, this is something I was talking about with my Marco Polo girls, which is like Christina Saju, Steph Umo, and Rashidra Scott.
Okay. We were,
because when I saw your Facebook, I was like, you guys, let's talk about this on our forum of just the safe four people.
Yes.
And we talked about the fetish thing. Mm-hmm. And Steph was like, yeah, but I've been fetishized by black men because they want to date a mixed girl.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like their thing is dating a girl with a certain type of hair and a light skin and whatever. And then she was like, what about the fetishizing of that black men do to our own women?
For sure.
And we talked about just like the music influence, rap music and this devaluing of black women that's just happened for so many years. And it sells. So people listen, but
Which is so funny because it does devalue women, but at the same time, I felt like because I wasn't fitting into that hip hop culture, the rap culture,
that it didn't apply.
The way that I talked, I felt like I wasn't good enough for that culture. Does that make sense? Even though it devalues women, I'm sitting there like, oh well, they're not gonna want me. I'm not a bad bitch. Like, I'm not walking around. I'm not walking around looking like an Instagram person every day, an influencer. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know.
I'm not a video hoe. I feel the same way. I felt like kind of ridiculed because I spoke a certain way, and it was honestly how my mother spoke, but. Mm-hmm. But she also was made fun of by sometimes people in my family.
Oh,
so it was
just
like. You know, and that got really old, and I've unpacked it now in my 30s. Like, that really hurt because it felt like you weren't enough. You needed to be more lax with your vowels and your consonants. You needed to be more, have more slang. So I totally can relate to that.
Yeah. But I wanted to date black guys.
Like, yeah, me too.
There were some black guys in my high school.
Okay. Fine as hell.
One of them asked me to, was it homecoming? And he had this big old tattoo on his back and he played football. My mom was like, you should date him. I was like, he's not a good kisser. He kissed me once and she was like, how was it? I was like, but the black guys in my school were very attractive and there was only a handful of us to begin with. I went to a school of like 4,000. So my graduating class was like 960 kids or something like that. And so when I got to college, I was used to a school that size and Carnegie was about the same size. But all the black people were in Spirit, which was the African American group on campus. And there weren't really a lot of black people or straight black guys in the theater program. So I was just kind of hanging out with, you know, guys who were gay, love you. But like there was no dating happening for me in that world.
Yes.
And then the white guys, you know, I experienced fetishizing from white guys in college as well. One guy, I remember he told me, he was like, man, you got some good DSLs. And I didn't know what that was.
Oh, my God. I remember when someone said that to me for the first time. It was a white woman, actually. Oh. Marlene.
I'm trying to work out what DSL is over here.
Dick sucking lips.
Oh, Lord.
I'll say it.
Yeah, he told me
I said, what does that mean? He goes, dick sucking lips. I said, don't you ever call me that ever again. I was like, that's not so a compliment. Disgusting. That's not a compliment. Like, your penis makes me want to throw up. That's too much information for you guys. But that's how I felt.
Especially after a comment like that. Of course.
Especially.
You
yeah.
But yeah, so I tried to date a white guy like near the end of college, and you know, we were friends, so it felt safe, but it just wasn't like meant to be. And then yeah, I tried like this white guy. I dated this white guy. I dated this white guy that I was telling you about. And after him, I was a little like scared. I was like, oh, white guys. I don't know. I was like, it made me feel different to get dumped by a white guy than it did a black guy, I think. I don't know, because of the relationship that is rooted in this idea of power and wanting and needing to be accepted by them. And, you know,
now how much of that is your own thing? And I think definitely the power dynamic is real.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm not really aware of it. Well, actually, no, I'm reminded of it every day. Like if we go anywhere, just by the way David is, you're amazing. But you walk around like, yes, this is mine.
Well, that's one of the things that we talked about in the clubhouse was one of my friends was very honest in the Facebook response. But she said, the thing that attracted me most to white men was their ability to walk around the world as though they own it. She was like, that was sexy. This, how they walked around in the world. And I was like, yeah, that's a huge draw. Cause there's a freedom. There isn't, you know, this constant, like looking over your shoulder. You're not worried about people following you in a store. Like it's so when you're interacting with a white man, I find when I date a white man, they have like their cares are just, and I'm like, and then dating black men, I find that there's so much to like. So that's, you know, that's just like you said, there's stuff in me, you know, that has either hindered me or helped me in my life. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, you know, as I'm growing as a black woman and learning more about who I am, I'm finding that there are ways in which I have to deconstruct what I built up.
Yes.
First off.
Yes.
And I find that is, if I'm being honest, one of the reasons why I'm like, I think I just want to date men of my race right now. Like, I feel like that's what my soul is longing for growth.
And I think love is love. Like, whatever you feel is like, looks good to you right now, you should do. I think in my own experience, especially last summer, it allowed me to have to turn a mirror on myself and go, what is it within me? Why am I so angry? And why can I not express it to David? And what you said about deconstruction is so right on. We have to go in and rewire the way we've grown up, because no matter how much we've tried not to, we've internalized that
to
be the system. And it took a minute, and it took a lot of it took a lot of vulnerability, to be honest.
True.
And that is uncomfortable. And it's really uncomfortable when you're doing it with someone who you think might not understand your experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that the case with any relationship? You will always have to open yourself up and expose things.
Yeah.
But it's less scary when it's someone who shares your life experience, right?
That's what it seems like. That's what it feels like. Because, you know, I can only go off of my experience, which is when I date black men, there's this thing we don't have to talk about. And because I'm more of a feminist than I think my mother or my grandmother, my mom's like, you're looking for a very specific type of man that there's not a ton of them. And so I'm like, yes, when I've dated men who are feminists and who are black, and it was so rewarding because I didn't have to explain certain aspects of being a woman. And then there were certain conversations I didn't have to have about my hair, my race. And one of the things that was said in the thread was some of the women felt like having to constantly explain to your partner racial dynamics and certain things about being a black woman gets unsexy. Start to feel like a teacher and a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a turn off. The idea of not having to explain my bonnet or X, Y, and Z, or you know what I mean? Like, so I thought that that was very interesting as well. That like,
that's interesting. Cause David and I, when we were thinking about our interview today, we talked about this at the table, and you said a really good point, babe, when you were talking about,
Well, you asked me about fetishization, I think.
Yeah. And you said you've never, it was never sexual.
Well, my fetishization, if it can be said to be that with Black women, I had to really wrestle with this question myself, but what I really came to was, it was not about physical attributes that I was fetishizing. It was about emotional attributes that had been cultivated out of a particular type of collective experience where, because there'd been so much oppression and pain on a daily basis to have to contend with as a Black person, as a Black woman, especially, that the result was that the women that I met who were Black tended to have values that comported better with mine. They tended to prioritize things in a way that comported with my priorities. They didn't get bogged down in a lot of stupid shit.
And yeah, you're a grown up.
Yeah.
You're a grown up, David. And my black girlfriends told me this one day. They said, Crystalline, Black women are for grown ups.
Wow, that is absolutely beautifully said.
And they're like, yeah.
And that's so for me, and that actually does become sexy. So, you know, when I'm with a grown up, like with a woman who, you know, doesn't get bogged down in the fact that I forgot that, you know, last Thursday was, Arbor Day and we were supposed to, you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't fucking matter. And you're not getting lost in the minutiae of details and stupidity. And, you know, with Brianna, every conversation we ever had was, you know, whether it was fun and funny or whether it was deep and probing, there was never any emotional baggage on top of it, and there was never any trivia on top of it that got in the way, and we could discuss trivial things, but it was and not just, I mean, so that was my experience of Black women and why I preferred ultimately, like, I definitely, by the time I met Brianna, I was definitely I preferred the company of Black women, but again, it wasn't that I didn't find that some women, some Black women who had fuller lips, that their fuller lips were not attractive. I do also find that attractive.
Sure.
But I can't say that there's like no physical component to some of it, but I also don't find that, I don't find all women of any, you know, of any race to be all one thing anyway.
Yeah.
So ultimately it's not, for me, it was never about a particular physical attribute that I ascribed to anyone in particular, because I actually don't do that. I don't find that to be true. I mean, if I looked at all of the Black women that I know, and all the Black women who were in Motown, and all the Black women who were in Invisible Thread, and all the Black women in all the shit, they all look different to me. They all have their own individual physical attributes. So for me, the one thing that binded them was their value system and what they prioritized, what they found important and what they found unimportant. And that was what was attracted to me.
And I think that that's very rare and wonderful, you know, that you can look back and you can look back at least in the last decade and be like, and are able to say, you know, I have as a white man, you know, not fetishized Black women. That's, or women in general. That's great to be able to say that. I mean, I don't think I remember I went home one time and I was talking to this guy online from a dating app, and we had gone to high school together. Yeah. And he said something like, yeah, I'm really into Black girls now. I wasn't in high school. And I was like, I'm not having sex with you.
Did you say that to him out loud?
Yes. I didn't say it out loud. I typed it. I was like, I'm not having sex with you.
And what was his response? Just curious.
You know, he was persistent, but like, he was persistent. But the point being is like, that's a fetishization. But
I might have said to you very innocently, you know, if it had been me at the time, I would have said, you know, I'm really finding I'm into Black girls now. It wasn't to the exclusion of other types of women or any other possibilities.
I think for me, it's also the idea that like, what was wrong with us before?
Oh, I see. Yeah,
well,
I never.
But then how can you say Black women are for grownups? I mean, maybe he's a grownup now. Maybe he understands he wants something more complicated.
But I, yeah, you didn't perceive that it had anything to do with any deeper emotional connection.
No, absolutely not. And I think it also would have been phrased differently. You know what I mean? Like, self-aware man who is
no, that's true.
A woman would have ever said, like, no, that's true. I'm in high school, but I'm into the Black girls.
Now, I might have said you've got great DSL, but other than that, I probably, no.
You would have gotten a swift block.
Yeah, I know. No, I would have known better. I think if I had come to that conscious conclusion, you know, in a way that I wanted to articulate it, I would have articulated it by saying, this is what I find about Black women.
Exactly.
And their values.
Yeah. Because there's a consciousness and a self-awareness to Black women. It's like James Baldwin says, like, you can't be a conscious, like, Black person in America and not enrage almost all the time. And I think a lot of Black women, because they've experienced gender and racial, that they are walking around with a self-awareness. So that doesn't mean that there's insecurities and toxicity that they need to work out and therapy on top of it, but there is a self-awareness. So it makes sense that, you know, Black women are for grownups, and that, you know, men who mature might find themselves less intimidated. Because I find that that's a lot of the reasons why, you know, men... The response I got growing up was, you're so intimidating, which obviously it should have been rephrased. I'm intimidated by you, because I was not intimidating.
No, that's right.
Humans are just so wacky. Like, humans are so weird. I have been marveling over us for like the past 2 or 3 days. I watched this documentary on meditation today. And it was wacky. And I just was sitting there in my living room standing, watching it. And I'm like, humans are so weird. Like, the way we congregate into these groups and into these systems and into these communities where we are felt seen, where we are felt heard, where we can see ourselves reflected back, mirrors and windows. Those are both very important. And it's just wild, the things that bring us together. So, yes, I would love to get to the point where it's like, our skin color doesn't bring us together because the oppression of skin color doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, but because of the fact that there are still white people walking around going, oh, racism isn't real, or capitalism doesn't, you know, hurt Black people. I'm like, it's going to be a long time.
That white girl accent is on point.
Well, you know, I've had a lot of practice.
It's very convincing.
Thank you. Sexy.
I can make it a little drier if you like.
Oh, it's a little vocal fry.
I'm going to
a little bit of vocal fry.
Amazing. Really amazing. You should definitely get those jobs on Nick Jr. doing, you know, voiceovers.
Someone get me a job.
But no, they won't give you the job of the white girl, because then it'll be like reverse racism.
Reverse
there's no
racism.
Such thing, people. I will be the first
one
in the room.
I agree. There's no such
to
thing.
To tell them there's no such fucking thing.
Some Republican will go,
I don't care.
This is bullshit.
I would, listen.
Hank Azaria doing the Simpson voice, and everybody gave him shit.
Yeah. I hope we get to a point where Black people can do voices of anybody. Just like I hope we get to a point where Black women can date whoever they want, because it's not dangerous and because there's space for it, you know?
Well, I think we're getting there. And I think that the change, I really do think, unfortunately, we're responsible for literally mankind. Black women. And I just think we are responsible for that too, because it is the change within us that allow someone in.
Yeah.
So that they can then show, you know, and it can bleed out. But if we look, I also think we need to guard. I was talking to the girls and it was like, wow, it's really important. I found that when I started to grow up out of college, it was really important to have Black relationships, especially Black female energy around me.
You know, Brianna, that's something that one of the girls in Clubhouse said.
Yeah.
You know, she said that she just didn't have especially during like 2016 and the Trump election, she's like, I had no black girlfriends. She's like, I didn't have black girlfriends to bounce these things. And it's so important.
Important. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, it's that idea of mirrors and windows. You need to be able to get that energy reflected. And it's different. I hate to say it, but it is the energy of four or five black women together is just different than
it is.
Than want me with a bunch of white girls.
White girls. It is.
And it doesn't, I'm not saying it's better. I'm just saying there's something like of the earth when I'm with a group of black women, no matter what age they are.
It feeds that puzzle piece of you. That's, you know, that there's puzzle pieces of us. We're not a monolith. Like, we don't all contain the same cutouts, but like,
yeah.
There is something in us, like a deep need to connect with another vagina, like a woman who gets a woman's experience and then gets it as like, gets it in terms of race. And one of the girls that was on the clubhouse, she starts telling us about how she was married and into her first year of like, they're married. They'd known each other for like 4 months and they got married and it was a white guy and it was a black girl.
Okay.
And they're about to have their first kid and they get into a conversation about the Civil War. And he says something like, well, it was about states' rights.
Oh, no. And you can't get married and do that.
She said, she was like, we almost got divorced. She was like, to divorce him at that point.
But what? I have to go to the root. What's going on? Why are we only dating for 4 months and marrying someone and we haven't discussed?
I knew you were going to say something about that.
Hello?
They were babies. And that's one thing she prefaced. She was like, we met very young. We fell in love very fast and we got married very quickly. Now, luckily, she found someone who, when he realized like how wrong he was, she was like, he was on his own doing research, doing the work. Yeah. And there was another girl who said that about her, you know, now husband, who was a white guy. They went on one date. She was like, I fell in love. And then I got dropped down the trap door of racism in the second date when he didn't know what blackface was. Wow. She was like, you feel safe. And then all of a sudden this door comes out from underneath you and you're like, oh, wait, I have to explain to you that you might be a bit racist and I've already kissed you. And now I want to like scrape my tongue. But they learned so much. And both of them said the same thing. Like, if right now the best you can do in 2020 and on, because so much has been revealed and so many lids have been open. She was like, it's easier to spot the one on the right side. Like someone who's on the right side, it's so much easier to spot now. And it's so much easier assess and you know, it's hard though, because I spend the first date asking questions make sure they're on the right side.
That MAGA flag on the front lawn is a big
dead giveaway.
Big dead giveaway. So
huge giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the advice that they left with. Like, find someone who's like, you can find a white person. She said it's going to be less likely that you find a white man statistically who's on the right side, who you don't have to explain things to. She's like, the idea that this white boy just magically grew up in a home where race was talked about with such comfort. And she was like, it's just so statistically rare that you're going to find one. But they're out there.
Interesting. I feel very blessed to have found David. Now,
David is
white, but he's Jewish. And it really is different. We always say it as a joke, but he does understand what it is to be under fire. And his, you know, his mother is so incredible, but she holds on to their culture. Like, we cannot lose this. We cannot lose our history. And it's something that was taken from us. And so when it comes to family and his culture, I just eat it up because we don't have it. Mm-hmm. And we have to work so hard to find our origins. And so it's been really cool to have a partner who is willing to do that work because he's already done it for himself in his own situation. And I have to explain things. I don't have to explain too much, but like certain references, like if there's a Martin reference where all the black people are in the room are laughing and David's like, tell me what it is. And I just am like, okay, I'm gonna give this side conversation run. It's just so you can know, because I want him to be in on it too.
Yes, of course.
But I kind of like when he's not in on it, and I'm like, you don't know what we laughing at, do you?
But most of the time I do, right?
Most of the time you do. Most of the time you do. Okay. But then there are just sometimes it's just like, this is Black Twitter. This is Black culture. This is the 90s Black culture.
Yes.
You know, how old were you in the 90s, babe? 30?
Yeah. So it might have had nothing to do with being Black that I didn't get about references from your childhood.
It's also just, because we're so far apart, like, he just won't get.
Like, you danced to Saved by the Bell the other day. Oh, I had no idea what was happening.
I was rocking around the living room to
Saved by the Bell.
And I'll come into my chest, and I give myself a look at the corner, just in time to see the bus drop.
I mean, that is my shit.
Yes.
I have no idea what that is. I still don't. I have no
idea. That's okay. You had your shows, like Andy Griffith and
I Love Lucy.
Okay.
Wait, I Love Lucy.
That's really
hilarious because I have every episode of I Love Lucy on DVD.
I wasn't born in the 50s. Almost, but I wasn't quite born in the 50s.
I don't even know.
I was so excited to see what shows you were going to say.
I couldn't tell you when Andy Griffith's show came out. I watched it. Lassie? Was that too early?
Those are a little. I mean, Andy Griffith, I suppose, that was a little when I was very, very little.
Very little.
But you didn't watch any like Black shows, did you, babe?
Well,
you watched like the Jeffersons.
Yeah, of course I watched the Jeffersons. I watched Cosby. I watched Good Times.
Family Ties.
But I wouldn't have watched Family Ties anyway.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
I mean, there's some shows I just wouldn't watch because this is where, like, you know.
Oh, same here.
Not great.
Just not good.
I'm a huge fan of Family Ties.
It was Family Ties.
Family Matters.
Family Ties, I think I did watch. That was the Alex Keaton.
Yes.
I did watch that one.
I watched that one too. I didn't get their family, but I watched it.
But no, that is not to say there were shows that would have felt like, oh, this show's not for me.
Yeah.
And I might have not watched, you know, like probably Living Single and Martin. Ooh. Would have fit into those categories.
Those
would have fit into those categories. Okay. Now I've done it.
Oh, the nine's a kind of well. I'm glad I got my girl.
Hey!
Just so happy I set that off.
A silhouette set it dancing, off. Honey. Give me the backlighting.
Keep your head up, boy. Keep your head up. What's
that's right. Yeah, he doesn't know the references, but that's okay.
But I see, here's the thing. But I watch you, and I watch you both, and I think, oh my God, you women are so fierce. Like, I don't need to know what that is. You're just so freaking fierce.
But you know what else you said, babe?
Maybe, what?
I was going to say, earlier today, he was like, it's endless. Oh, I hate you. It's endlessly fascinating to be married to you, is what he said. Because he was like,
well, you're just kind of a unicorn, Brianna.
No,
I feel like anytime your name comes up, people are like, oh my God, I love her.
Oh, who said that?
Well, Rachel Flynn and I had very similar reactions about you.
I understand those reactions.
I would date Rachel.
I think we all would. I feel safe dating Rachel.
I love her. She just texted me the other day. She sends her love, babe. I forgot to tell you.
No, I
took endlessly fascinating to be like, he keeps learning things about me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And about us. And he feels like he's slowly, it's a slow process, but like the wallpaper's coming down and he's like, oh, I see back here. This is cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's the flip side of the, you know, having to explain things is the being endlessly fascinated by someone because they are different from you and they have different experiences. And there's, I will never stop learning from Brianna just because of who she is. We will never get into that thing of just like after 4 or 5 years of just like, oh, it's the same fucking day and it's the same person. And we grew up in the same neighborhood practically, or we might as well have. So there's no discoveries to be had. We're all constantly discovering each other. And I think it's part of what keeps us so, you know, we're just so juiced by each other all the time. And I think that's a big part of it.
Juice, baby.
Juice. Baby.
I will never forget when I took you home to meet my family And I have a deaf aunt and uncle. And so we were sitting at the table and I just started signing. And then he goes, and afterwards we walked out and he goes, so apparently you know sign language. And it was just like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, because there's never a reason for me to sign.
But then I we would go to Cincinnati and I'd be in temple with her and I'd be like singing in Hebrew.
Oh,
and
she's my God,
like,
full out.
So she'd be like, oh, well, you sing in Hebrew. Okay, no problem.
But wait, Bree, you never bragged about knowing sign language?
No, because I don't know it as much as I should. I used to know it like, that was the only way I could communicate with
You're a better person than me. I'd be like, I know sign language. Every day, I speak English, I speak sign language.
You know, she knows sign language about as well as I know Hebrew. So neither one of us are bragging.
We can get by. I've helped a few people, I'm just saying. Having grown up with white people everywhere, and everyone was colorblind, I always felt safe with white people. That proximity to danger that your grandmother has, which is an incredible way of saying it, because now I think about it and I feel like my grandparents and aunts and uncles, like they had that too. And I didn't have any of that. I felt safe. I was taken care of. My best friends were white. Their parents loved me. They still do, you know, and a lot of people, a lot of Black folks are very uncomfortable with that. Even folks our age. And I sometimes feel, can I just say this on the podcast? Sometimes I feel in our Black theater bubble, that sometimes Black folks think I'm less Black. Do you feel this way? Like I'm less Black because I married a white man. So I feel like sometimes they're like, no, we don't want to ask her because her opinion is probably colored with that of a white man's.
I think in that case, they're looking for a very specific perspective.
Yes, I agree.
And that's all it is that they want a very specific perspective of whatever it is they're asking about. But I do feel, I'm listening to you talk about your proximity to whiteness. Like, I'm not friends with the people I grew up with.
Really?
From my hometown. They all voted for Trump.
Oh, yeah, Texas.
And I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with it.
No, I don't know what to tell you.
And that's kind of where I was. I was like, if they ever want to talk about it, it's a lack of safety for me now. Your views are actually like, I don't want to be out in public with you, someone who thinks that race doesn't exist and that people are colorblind. Because then when something happens to me, where are you going to be? You won't even know how to deal with the situation. You have not done the work to understand that there are people walking around with really violent, you know, mindsets. And so I love that. Hearing that you are still friends with your white girlfriends, I'm like, thank God you were friends with the right people who understood, you know?
Yes. However, sometimes they are very small town, not small-minded because
there's a bandwidth for that.
Yes.
I feel like we're like, people are hearing it now. We're having more conversations, but like I have friends who won't even. A friend of 11 years looked at me and was just like, I feel like your views on race, like I need to help you. And I'm like, girl, you were in a Black show with me. What are you talking about? Like, how have you existed in the world of theater with this mindset? So I find that the people around me that are white are like, it's getting less and less because I'm just like, I don't have the bandwidth for it. So I certainly don't have the bandwidth for it. And, you know, relationships that are romantic, you know, if I can't do it in friendships, it's like, I don't, but once again, that's stuff that we can talk about as Black women growing, you know, when we get healing. So when I say people are looking for a very specific perspective, it's because you have found a way to coexist.
But I, if I may, I do think that it is incumbent upon the white person in the situation to do that work, to do that homework in a way as you would do in any relationship with another person that you cared about or you wanted to embark upon something, you know, serious with. You would investigate where they came from and what that meant and who they were, whether they were wherever they came from or whatever their, you know, heritage was, you would investigate that because you were interested
in
them.
Bless you.
And because you wanted to be able to, you know, be in conversation with them. So, and if you're, and I think the many white girlfriends and friends that Brianna has from college and from, you know, from before that, the ones who are in her life, I see them doing a lot of that work.
Oh, God, so many books. So many books. And even
I love that
George Floyd happened, honey, I said, don't call me. And then I was like, why didn't nobody call me? And they were like, we didn't know. They were just like, we just need to be told what to do. And I said, I can't tell you what to do, but you have resources. You have lots of white friends. And y'all, and so they started a book club. They're reading
all. I love it.
It's like really sweet.
Yeah, and I love that.
Isn't it? David has this thing of giving grace to each other, and
yeah,
it's really true. Like they've got to give us grace for mm-hmm. this experience, this traumatizing experience that has yeah. been and continues to be, and then we have to give them grace, the space to learn. And make mistakes.
Yes.
One thing. Like we all have to be okay. That's human. That's human.
Because right? if there's demonstrable effort involved to mm-hmm. get to the other side, if yeah. you're seeing that those actions being taken mm-hmm. in good faith and with full heart,
yeah.
then grace can exist in that space.
I agree. And I had white girlfriends who, one who, you know, I had said on I'd said on social media, like, don't none of y'all call me. I don't want to talk about nothing. And one of them would text me and she'd be like, okay, I love you. I'm not going to call you, but I am going to continue to text you and tell you how much I love you and how much I'm going to work to be better. And she was consistent for like 3 or 4 weeks because I was not giving white people space. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm sorry. This is a very traumatizing period. So I needed like a month where I just didn't. But, you know, and then I had girlfriends who were reading books. One of them like corrected me. On a fact, like about on a year or a date. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And I was like, thank you. I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate that. Not only have you done the work, it was like a very humble correction. And it was also very much like, there's a lot to take in about Black history. There's a lot
that we don't even know
that we are still learning, you know?
You said 1618, didn't you?
Right. I think I got the dates confused with the Rodney King beatings and I can't remember what you're talking about, but I remember it had to do with those dates. And
Rodney King was 1993.
Look at you. Go in. It's because you know it to the OJ trial, probably. Like I feel like everybody knows that.
I actually lived like two blocks away from where
the fires.
Where that all happened.
Wow.
So, at the time, yeah.
Yeah, I have white girlfriends who are doing the work and it's really and gives me hope because I'm like, if my white girlfriends can do the work, maybe there are white men out there who have done the work. And when we go on our first date, like I don't have to explain blackface.
Like, I promise you they are. I my friend Johnny, he's like tall, white, handsome, all American guy.
Yeah.
And he is so sweet. And I remember about a year or two ago, he said, well, I'm doing this new thing where if I'm at a table with like women of color, I just shut the fuck up. He was just like, I make it that my job.
Is he single?
He actually is. he was like, I make it my job to listen more than I speak. And I said, that is, you need to tell all your white friends to do that.
All
and he would absolutely.
All
you know?
Of them.
Yeah. Cause you know, David is sometimes guilty of that. He gets off on a subject and I'm like, okay, so you've done all the speaking now and
right?
we have no time to hear from the women.
When did that happen though?
No, it very rarely happens. And today he was like, this is mostly you and Crystal. I'm not saying anything. And I was like, babe, okay, don't do that though. That's overboard.
I love input. I think the hard part is when men like to interrupt your experience and your knowledge with their confidence. You're like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Wait. I love that you're confident about this.
True. It's true. David's quiet on that.
Oh my God. Are you kidding?
I think that that's my, one of the things I can, you know, as we're ending, I can say like, I've been very quiet on social media. More so than I was like in the summer.
Okay. Yes.
And that's because my rage wasn't always channeled in a productive way. And so as I'm coming into this time of like, stuff's going to open up soon, I'm eventually going to be working again. it's like, how do I walk into these spaces and reframe some of these thoughts so that I can show up and not be on guard all the time? Mm-hmm. So I realize a lot of it is also work for me as a Black woman, because I want to be available and I want to be present, and I don't, it's just, I realize that, you know, in the midst of us talking about all of this, it also is a lot of like self-work too, you know?
Well, we're, like I said, we're responsible for everything. Yeah. And then there's all this work we have to do for ourselves to survive and be like open, generous, loving, you know,
yeah,
Black women.
Yeah.
By the way, before you get booked for June, just please check with me first, okay?
Here we go.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just saying, just please, please check in with me first before you commit to anything in June.
How dare you?
I'm just saying. Listen, I have that proprietary right.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for still wanting to work with me.
Oh, are you kidding?
Oh, Crystal, come on.
Thank you. Guys, this has been such a long stretch of not working. I was on a call with another project, and I can't remember which creative said it, but he was like, wow, I'm really wishing, or he said, I'm really glad we cast so young. So now that there's room, so when we do come back, not everyone's going to be like, you know, in their 40s.
Aged up.
Oh, and I'm like, I'm grateful you did that as well, because, you know,
okay,
we're going on 2 years.
Girl, I cannot believe when we come back really properly next year.
Right.
We're all praying for the fall, but properly next year, we will be solidly on our way to 40, like solidly.
Honey.
Now it's kind of, but
I started this pandemic as good, like young mid 20s.
Yes.
I'm getting to like my late 20s, early
20s. Come on, you guys, when this will be over, you'll still be playing teenagers, both of you.
Well, don't, I never played teenagers, but Crystal and Will.
No, I refuse to play anything with a backpack at this point.
Here we go. That's another interview.
That's another interview.
Backpacks and a school bell. If there's a school bell in your show and I'm answering to it, I better be a teacher.
Oh, God. R.I.P. Mean Girls.
Well, Crystal and Lloyd,
we love you so much.
You're the
best. I love
best.
You guys. Thank you for having me and letting me be so candid. I'm practicing it in the sense of like, you know, you don't want to, you're learning how to like approach these conversations.
Yeah.
With a good amount of like transparency, you know?
Yes.
Well, come back anytime and bring all your candor with you. We love
Great.
You.
I'll come back when I'm, if I ever date a white man again, we'll do like a double date interview.
Special swirl.
Host op.
Gotta
go. I mean, if you guys know anyone decent, I'm open. I'm looking. I'm single. Anyone listening?
I'm single. You know, Johnny would not know
to
what
all
to
the
do
chocolate men. Oh, right. Yes. White guys too.
Johnny's white.
But yes.
Chocolate man.
If there are any chocolate men out there who like to read and who have beards, find me on Clubhouse.
Bye.
We hate you. All right. You're the best.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me talk to you in my closet. I adore you guys.
I love that you closed the door.
There's no one out there. It's
all right. And let's all talk soon. IRL. Okay.
All right. All right. We will in real life.
Yeah. Got it.
All right.
Okay. This is sign language for I love you.
Love you.
I love
Live
you.
Long and prosper.
May the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
Bye. Bye. Oh, I end this? Do I end it?
No, you got to end it, Brie.
Oh, okay. We love you. Bye.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom. And we're back!
Oh my God, Crystalline, that was amazing.
She's amazing.
We love you, Crystalline.
Didn't we love that, having a Broadway star sit and talk about their experience with dating and love and different types of men? And this is a very interesting subject, because I hate to say it, but I watch The Bachelor. Okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm putting it out there.
Do it.
I'm a piece of trash. Mm. And I watch The Bachelor and Big Brother.
You do.
Religiously. I'm much more addicted to Big Brother, and I've got David on Big Brother too.
Awful.
But The Bachelor right now, it's the first Black Bachelor. Now, he is technically biracial, but look, to me, if you are half Black, you're Black. That's how you identify. He walks around in this world. People see him and they go, that's a Black man. They don't see him and go, oh, I wonder if his mother's white. That's not a thing. So I have been watching, and apparently there's this whole thing going down with, I don't know what Chris Harrison said. I got to find out. I got to actually find out the information from my friend Emma, because she's like really good at this stuff. But there's a lot of race talk going on, because he's dating. This is how it always is. Rachel did the same thing. They date different types of people. And, you know, middle America, where I'm from, people who are watching The Bachelor, they may not be as used to watching Black men date, you know, white women, Black women, Latina women, European women, like, you know, and vice versa. They're really not used to seeing a Black woman date all different types of men.
Yeah.
Rachel Lindsay, I believe, she kind of set the path for them with this. And now it's the first Black man, and it's just very, very exciting. Oh. But I think it's a cool topic, because there's a lot of old historical boundaries that we put on ourselves, and not to mention the ones that we put on ourselves in 2021. Of course, it's all generational and it's all learned, but, you know, I think it's really cool to sort of dissect and figure out how we all feel about that kind of thing, especially since David and I are together and we're navigating it, and we're navigating it beautifully, because David is super open and communicative and really actually exposed to all different types of people from a really young age. So I don't have to teach him about basics, but, you know, there are things like, what have you learned? You've learned all about hair extensions, which...
True. But again, I was in the theater the first weekend that Good Hair came out. So, like, I have always been, you know...
He's just thirsty. Yeah, you love Black folks.
I love Black women. We've discussed that.
But not in a fetish way.
But not in a fetish way. No, it was like... Just, you know, I identified with what they identified with.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to learn more.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really cool conversation to have. And if you guys want to see Crystalyn when this all comes back, I believe there's a show that she's a part of called Bliss, which will hopefully be coming to New York. I think she's like a superhero in it. So... in addition to the superhero that she is in daily life. So look out for Crystalyn. And of course, she's probably going to be on television at some point too.
And if you ever hear of a show of mine coming out called Fallout, there's a role in that.
Yes.
That I've basically written for her.
Yes. Not me. So don't worry about that.
That's another show, babe.
I guess that's another show. But you wrote that for someone else. So it's not really for me. I'm still waiting on my credit.
Okay. There's going to be so many, babe. You're going to be sick of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought 5 years ago. But. We're still waiting.
It's going to be fine. All right, babe. That was a great episode. I loved episode one of season two. So do you have any orders of business, or do we go straight to the finale?
I think go straight to the finale.
So it's a love theme this week, and in honor of our love theme this week, we're going to bring back something that y'all haven't heard unless you were at our wedding. If you were at our wedding,
then you heard this,
and you'll have to sit through it again. It was read at our wedding by the great Alison Blackwell, who, had it been on television, would have definitely been nominated for an Emmy.
Definitely nominated for an Emmy.
But
actually, after she read it, our officiant said, "Oh, a Tony nomination at least," which made the whole wedding party laugh. We had a lot of laughter at our wedding. It was perfect. Okay, so this piece is from, it's just an excerpt from The Invitation by the poet Oriah. It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for, and if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you will risk looking like a fool for love, for your dream, for the adventure of being alive. It doesn't interest me what planets are squaring with your moon. I want to know if you have touched the center of your own sorrow, if you have been opened by life's betrayals, or have become shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you can sit with pain, mine or your own, without moving to hide it or fade it or fix it. I want to know if you can be with joy, mine or your own, If you can dance with wildness and let the ecstasy fill you to the tips of your fingers and toes without cautioning us to be careful, to be realistic, to remember the limitations of being human. I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself, if you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul, if you can be faithless and therefore trustworthy. I want to know if you can see beauty even when it's not pretty, every day, and if you can source your own life from its presence. I want to know if you can live with failure, yours or mine, and will stand on the edge of the lake and shout to the silver of the moon, yes. It doesn't interest me to know where you live or how much money you have. I want to know if you can get up after the night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do what needs to be done to feed the children. It doesn't interest me who you know or how you came to be here. I want to know if you will stand alone on the center of the fire with me and not shrink back.
And scene. Boom, 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 boom.
The Swirl with Bree and Dave was created using Anchor, and you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Don't forget to go there and rate, review,
go ahead,
and subscribe.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, I'm Brianna Marie, and he's Dave Lyrics.
Music for this podcast was written by Bo Black.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time on The Swirl.